Oops.
Julie?
Payables.
Wait a minute,
Julie, you know, we lost you.
Oh. Yeah, repeat the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. Somebody else is making a lot of noise. Okay, I will say that again. There have also been instances in the past where local finance committees have had a list of the specific vendors for whom money was owed to, and that has caused problems in the past as well. So that's kind of one of the another one of the items that the motion was intended to address.
Yes.
Point of information, please.
Go ahead, Vanessa.
So is two questions. The fact that the motion is being made now, would this be a change in practice from what currently exists, which presumably means that LSBs up until this moment, if we vote for this, would have been able to get whatever information they requested, any of financial information?
So I'll take a crack at answering that question, which I believe is, or one of the things I'm going to suggest is, this does not change what local finance committees have typically gotten on a monthly basis. So that should be, you know, status quo ante. It's just that some have asked for additional information, you know, as Jim Sagerton noted, things like the general ledger, which, you know, that's like the entire set of your books. You don't give that to the public.
Okay, Julie, so help me a little bit. So I presume maybe you understand what I'm trying to get to with the situation at PFW.
Yeah.
And there's certain information that we've been trying to get from a particular management official. And so now we, the PFW LSB, was asking for that information. So there was a lot of different answers all over the map as to whether we could have it or not. So now I hear this motion, which makes it sound like we can't have it.
Chair, may I speak to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Jim Sagerton.
This motion, Vanessa, arose before that situation at WPFW. It was a different station that this demand for the general ledger was coming out of. And I don't know, you know, you're being appropriately discreet about exactly what you're speaking of, but you know, any kind of salary information, vendor contract, you know, who's owed what, that sort of information is proprietary or confidential, and that's what it's directed at. And it's not like we're, you know, it's not kept from the directors, as was noted. You know, the directors, members of the finance committee, the general managers, they all, you know, we have this information. It's not trying to be hidden. It's just that it shouldn't go out to people who don't have, who haven't signed non-disclosure agreements.
So point of information again, Chair. Two questions. Does the LSB have a fiduciary responsibility? It is my understanding that we do. Two, have LSB members signed NDAs?
Excuse me, I just need to say also Vanessa's time is up, so Chair, I don't know what you want to do about that, but
got it. Thanks.
You have a stack, Chair.
That was a point of information.
Yeah, yeah.
Move to extend for 3 minutes.
I move to amend, Chair, stack, and Beth, myself, Darlene, and Jim on the stack.
Right.
Fair enough.
Any objections to the motion? Is there a second to the motion to amend, to extend, to exhaust the stack?
Second, Donna.
Thank you, Donna. Any objections to the motion to extend, to exhaust the stack? Hearing none, that motion carries. Okay. So that's Lawrence, Darlene, and Jim Dingman. But Vanessa has had a question on the, and she deserves an answer. And the question was,
Do LSBs have a fiduciary responsibility, and have LSB members sign NDAs?
I don't know the answer to the first question. LSB members have not all necessarily signed NDAs. The kinds of LSB delegates who have signed NDAs are those who are treasurers and serving on the NFC and those who are delegates who are serving on the audit committee because of the management letter, but I am not aware that any other committee has systematically asked LSB delegates to sign NDAs, and I'm unaware that any LSB has, or let me put it this way, if LSBs have asked members to sign NDAs on their own, that the PMB doesn't know about it, right? So
Chair, can someone answer the question about LSBs having fiduciary responsibility? Because if we don't, then it doesn't matter.
This keeps coming up. Arthur, do you want to say something, please?
I don't even think it's a close question.
James, you have to unmute yourself. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No matter what Sharon Adams says, members of the LSB have fiduciary responsibilities to the corporation. They make important decisions about the corporation. So they do, and they have a duty of loyalty too. And if that needs to be made clear, we should put it in the bylaws, but I still, it exists independent from the bylaws. And if somebody walked up to you and said, I mean, I guess we've now heard it because Sharon's on the LSB, and said, I'm on the LSB. I have no responsibility to the corporation. You would turn white, probably.
Chair, point of information.
Chair, point of order. I don't object to the point of information, but we're waiting here, and my colleague has had a lot of latitude. So
point of information overrules whoever's on the stack, but I leave it to the chair. I have a follow-up question. I'm not on the stack. I am asking points of information. So
go ahead, and Vanessa, ask the question. If you can make it quick, please.
So if I could, I don't know, to ask, I guess, you, and then maybe Arthur can answer. If LSBs do have fiduciary responsibility, then how are we supposed to honor that responsibility if we're considered the public, like Joe Blow on the street, and we don't have access to financial information?
Oh, so I think part of that is, I'll take a crack at this, and if Jim Sagerton wants to add something, he can. The idea is that any time a station puts a budget together, you know, there's a, in theory, a detailed template where behind that, you know, it's like a spreadsheet with a whole bunch of tabs, right? And so there's confidential salary information on one of the tabs. All those back tabs don't get, like, the average member of the LSB local finance committee doesn't get to see all those tabs. All they get to see is the summary page, which is kind of, you know, all the rolled up information that says, here we have a line item and, you know, it covers personnel, total, aggregate. Here's a line item and it covers contractors, total, aggregate. And it doesn't have anybody's name, doesn't say what anybody earns, but, you know, it's enough information. And so the idea is that the general manager, the business manager, the treasurer, and the PMB directors can see that detail, but members of the public can't. Members of the public for purposes of this motion. So, Jim Sagerton, would you like to add anything to that process-wise?
I would, just not necessarily process-wise, but the comment about Joe Blow walking in off the street. And the history of the finance committees is interesting, to say the least, but they're all different. All of our finance committees at the different stations are different in the way that they achieve their membership. Some are LSB members only. And at WBAI, for example, indeed, Joe Blow can walk in off the street and after attending three meetings can become a member of our finance committee, doesn't even have to be a member of Pacifica or of WBAI. Well, we have people attending our finance committee now from other places in Pacifica. people who are members at other stations. So, yeah, you can actually just walk in off the street and attend these meetings, and then, so it would be an issue. But even more important than that is it's just, you don't want personnel, salary information, vendor information, lawyers, you know, information that's in the general ledger. You just don't want that to be an open book. People won't work with you if you do that.
Exactly. And let me just add, Vanessa, that I think the key here is that the treasurer, who is sometimes an LSB delegate, but sometimes not a delegate, you know, has to be a trustworthy person in this, you know, as the one person who is not part of Pacifica staff, you know, in terms of putting the budget together. So that's why it's really important. So there you have it. I've got to finish with the stack because we're not making fast enough progress here, and we have to get through at least the first election motion this evening. So it's Beth and Lawrence, then Darlene. Beth?
Thank you. Yes. As a member of the local finance committee in question, I support this. I think all delegates should sign non-disclosure agreements at KPFK. Ours all do. But the committee, as James just cited, their committee, our committee includes an unlimited number of members of the public, people who, as he described, can walk in off the street, and there's no litmus test as to whether they're even members of the station. This comes to this point because it has become a standing problem with unlimited demands, unending demands, and from my perspective, unreasonable demands to the point of being burdensome to financial staff, burdensome and to the point of being insulting too. It descends into accusations. And I think to have a clear, bright line like this so that we can't be accused of playing favorites or withholding things that we are required to provide would be very helpful. I do have one question about how this would affect members of local station boards who are elected to the audit committee and receive some of this proprietary information there. And does this motion as it's worded accommodate that situation, or how would it affect that?
Let me take a crack at that. It says resolve that the only financial documents that can be shared with the public are. And so, it says it includes the final audit. I mean, everybody who's on the, let me say everybody who's on the NFC is covered because the public is anyone not on the PMB or treasurers. So the NFC is covered. Technically speaking, only the PNB directors on the, audit committee are covered. And it says the final audit. So, and, you know, what the audit committee has done this year is, you know, like the PNB required people to have signed an NDA before they could attend a meeting, you know, and be, or where the management letter was discussed or have access to the management letter.
Julie, Beth's time is up actually, so.
Thank you. Lawrence, then Darlene. Lawrence?
First I have a procedure question, Chair, for you and Mr. Tatum. I believe the only point that interrupts is the point of order. point of information, that I believe the chair has to grant, that point of information, but it does not interrupt. Is that correct, Mr. Tatum?
Yes, but it's called a request for information.
Oh, request for information.
Yeah, right. People keep saying point of information. That went out with Robert's Rules version 11. It went out the window. But yeah, and request for information. You're right. It's granted by the chair, but point of order is only interrupting motion. And that's because what someone is saying at the time could be breaking a rule. So that's why you have to interrupt. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tatum.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. In regards to the ledger, and I'm in complete agreement that everyone involved in Pacifica governance must sign NDAs. I'm not going to say should, must sign NDAs, because, you know, it's just something that we have to do. A question to the treasurer, is a ledger when it comes to salary and vendors. Are those just numbers, or are there numbers and names attached to those numbers? Yes or no? James?
James Sagerton, go ahead.
It's not really yes or no. It's
okay.
Well, I guess it's yes. It's, there are names associated with the numbers.
Okay, thank you. Did we make a motion to provide that information as long as the names are redacted? And I believe we made that motion last month. And I think it's a fair request. I understand the concern that Vanessa has in regards to getting financial information. We have a lot of members of the finance committee on KPFK. So I'm concerned about that, but I think, on the other hand, if there's NDAs and if information could be redacted according to that motion, if Marianne could pull it up at her leisure, we did pass a motion that I believe I made and was seconded, that we provide information, that Stephanie provided information that was redacted. And I think she has carried that out because she has provided some information that was redacted.
Mark, your time is up.
Okay, 15 seconds, Chair. Because I went on listening to points of information forever. So I believe we need to support our governance signing NDAs. So the request is for Marianne to find that motion that we made asking Stephanie Wells to provide redacted information to governance.
Can you narrow it down any for me?
Maybe. While you're looking, Darlene, you're next, and then Jim Dingman. Darlene.
Okay. The first question actually is to Stephanie, which is to ask her, how often have we been able to produce monthly P&Ls? And let me make that even more complicated, not just P&Ls, but when every time we do in a P&L, does that also adjust, is there a completed balance sheet?
We do consolidated financials every month that is consolidated for the overall company, and then we have individual tabs of consolidated financials per station. The last one we had that was sent to the board last month was the year-to-date ending August. We have not run a consolidated financials yet for the end of September, and Markeisha should have that before the next board meeting. Aged payables, we run on a regular basis, but we don't have the ability to run those for every station. Some of the stations we need to, I usually have to call them, send emails, and try to get updated records. records because they may keep their books, the consolidated financials for the those finance committees. It's up to the treasurer to run then a...
Thanks, Stephanie. Jim Dingman, then.
No, I was, that was question number one that I asked for.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And, so in this proposal, the P&Ls are by unit. Is that correct? Each unit can ask for its own P&L and not the, Pacifica P&L. I just want to get that stipulated.
Correct. And when they get the consolidated financials, they are per unit, and then the PNB gets the consolidated financials, and the National Finance Committee gets the consolidated financials for every unit and an overall consolidated financial for the national, for Pacifica as a whole.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Sorry, Darlene. Jim Dingman, then Jim Sagerton.
Yes, thank you. Julia, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, this obviously offers me a delicious opportunity to raise the fact that there's another level of financial information that we tend to not ask people to sign NDAs on, and that is the actual fundraising that occurs on a daily basis during fundraising. The staffs are shown how much money is raised per show. And what I find very interesting is that I'm at the 11th time I'm asking for this information from various stations, and all I get is the possibility of legal action. So we cannot proceed without knowing the actual innards of the sinews of how we earn 95% of our revenue right now, which is derived from listener membership. And I throw that in the mix because the obstacles, you know, it's like, you know, I'm used to obstacle courses. That's cool, you know, but, you know, if we're going to overcome the big obstacle course, which we're facing as a foundation, that is fiscal stability, we have to know how we actually earn our money in detail so we can have sensible decisions and have it seen over long periods of time, because we know it takes a while to work. And we also need to learn from other stations that do better why they're doing better, not this medieval baron type approach that reminds me of, you know, the 11th century in Europe. Thank you.
Jim Sagerton.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on Lawrence's amendment, and I would like him to consider, if he would, some way of phrasing that so that it's an exception to the rule to get the redacted information, because the author of this amendment, one of the treasurers, was responding to a constant demand just for access to the general ledger as a regular matter. And that would be a lot of work for somebody to do, especially for the executive director, and or for Markeisha to prepare it so that the executive director could provide it, to go through the general ledger and try to redact all of the information that would be revealing, and mistakes could be made. So I think, you know, I don't have a problem with that being done on an as needed basis if there's a real need, but not on a regular basis, just so anybody who feels like it can ask to have all that work done so they can get information that, you know, they're not necessarily going to do anything with.
Thank you, Jim. Chair?
Yes.
I was just merely making a request that Marianne find that motion. I wasn't making an amendment to the motion that's currently on the floor. I don't know if that helps you out, James.
Yes, thank you for that clarification, because I hadn't thought you made a motion, and so, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I do think, we certainly discussed, you know, Stephanie providing some aggregated information on age payables, you know, maybe by vendor category, you know, just so that the PMB had a better sense of you know, some of the issues, right? We discussed it, but my recollection is that we didn't necessarily act on anything. I mean, I think we might have put it out there, but I'm not sure we decided anything. So I just wanted to share that. That's just my recollection, which is certainly entitled to being incorrect.
Chair, I'm sorry, Vanessa. Point of personal privilege, please.
Go ahead.
Okay. I object to the comment that was made that that he endured ad hoc, you know, ad nauseum requests for information inappropriate. Two, when I made the repeated requests for information or point of information, as I said at the time, I did say that I defer to the chair. So that comports with the parliamentarian's rule that it's up to the chair to decide. So I just wanted to set the record straight. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Folks, we need to move on. Can we go to, well, first let me see. Are there any objections to this motion?
Yes.
All right.
Or I'll abstain. If nobody else objects, I'll abstain. It's too broad.
Thank you, Vanessa. Are there any objections other than Vanessa to the motion? Can I do that, Mr. Tatum?
I think Madam Vanessa voted too early. That's what I think.
Okay.
I did not vote.
Well, she said she would only abstain if she was the only one objecting. I'll tell you what. So Vanessa has made it clear. Let me ask again. And Vanessa, don't you say anything this time. Are there any objections to the motion? And now I'm going to say hearing none. The motion carries, and Vanessa's going to say,
I abstain.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate your cooperation on that. And so, Mary and I hope you got that.
Nicely done.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so that moves us on to the motion from the Elections Committee. And, yes, it's 10:14, and we were supposed to adjourn to closed session by 10, but this is an important motion that we get through this evening in open session. So would someone from – well, here.
Time? How much time?
Yeah, this one gets more time. Hang on. This one gets 20 minutes. Okay. Isn't Julie optimistic at times? Okay, I'm just going to read this, right? Because we're going to have to figure out how the final motion ultimately winds up being worded. Okay, so what's in blue, which... For the directors who are looking at the agenda, right? What's in blue is the original motion from the executive committee. And I'll read that first. And then.
Elections committee.
What'd I just say?
Executive.
Oh, there's no such thing as an executive committee. Why would I even say that? elections committee, because I'm overtired. That's why. Elections committee. Thank you very much. I'm just going to read the blue one, the motion with the blue part first, and then I suspect someone will make a motion to make the amendment to substitute the red text for the blue text. So let me just first read the original Elections Committee motion. Okay. the Pacifica National Elections Committee moves that the Pacifica National Board work with Pacifica Management to notify the Pacifica membership that Pacifica Management has stated that there are no funds available for the bylaws mandated 2022 local station board elections. In the event that the bylaws mandated 2022 delegate elections do not occur, ensure that as local station board delegates end their terms in December of 2022, vacant delegate seats will not be extended for those terming out or be filled by those defeated in a past election, and that the local station boards will be smaller for part or all of 2023 until elections are held, and further ensure that the smaller 2023 local station boards will elect PMB directors in January of 2023, and these new directors will be on the boards for part or all of the year 2023, depending on when new elections are held. That's the first bullet. Second bullet, implement plans to reduce the cost of elections, raise funds for an election, including creating a mechanism for Pacifica members to donate specifically for elections, develop a workable timeline for an election based on the availability of funding, and contract only with neutral persons to be involved in making election rulings. So that's the original motion from the Elections Committee. And so, would someone from the Elections Committee like to, would someone from the Elections Committee like to motivate that?
I second the motion.
Oh, thank you. Well, you don't have to because it came from a committee. So.
Got it.
Discussion of the motion. Do not all raise your hands at once.
Chair?
Yes, Lawrence.
I'm sorry. I'll speak after Vanessa.
Go ahead, Vanessa.
Okay, so as a member of the Elections Committee, I don't recall when this was passed or even voted on, but maybe that's just me.
I can sort of partly answer that question for you.
Okay.
I want to suggest that it was in the May timeframe and roughly, give or take. So it's been some months ago. And I think what's happened is, it came and we put it on our agenda and we were busy for a couple of meetings and we kept kicking the can down the road. And then at one point, sometime this summer, you know, basically because of our, financial situation, we said, let's postpone it till October. And then, you know, we postponed it till October. Everybody agreed. And then our first two meetings in October, kind of conspired to make it be that tonight's the first opportunity we have to talk about these. So you're absolutely right that you don't remember it. And that's because it really did happen some months ago. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I have nothing more to say. I'll put my hand back up if I have anything else.
Okay.
I object to it, but other than that, I'll speak later.
Thank you. Lawrence and then James McFadden. Lawrence?
I'm completely multitasking. So from what I heard from the motion, I'm certainly not going to support that motion. I mean, we are in extenuating circumstances. What the bylaws asks us to do is to agree, whether we're going to hold elections or not, and then set a date, to hold those elections. So I, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not, viewing this motion, with a natural solution to what's in front of us, what's in front of the foundation right now. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. James McFadden and then Aki McFadden.
So, when I look at what was given out, it sounds like there's going to be three flavors of this motion, the one that you just read, and then there's the one that's in text in red, and then which I assume is going to happen as a amendment to the motion you just made, that was just made, and then there's another flavor that Vanessa has written that's going to be also tested is it a motion to amend this initial motion. Is that what's coming down here? Is that what we're going to see? We're going to see two motions to amend, and we're going to try to decide which of the flavors we want?
Well, I suspect that's what's going to happen, but, you know, I don't have a crystal ball.
So, in a way, we're waiting for the motion to amend, right?
Fair enough.
Okay. I'll stop there.
Okay, thank you. Aki.
Well, I have a substitute motion.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a substitute motion that I put it in the chat. And I also would put it on the email. So let's see here. Basically, the substitute motion is to extend the term of the delegates instead of keeping it vacant.
Okay.
So Aki, if I could, what you pasted into the chat is the same as what's here, except that it adds in that second or that bullet that was in blue text, it adds the part that says, no, I don't see it. Oh, it's extending, I'm sorry.
Julie, before you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Twist your brain about that.
Yes.
So it's my opinion that would be illegal. And I actually consulted with the one lawyer who might bring a lawsuit about it, Jan Goodman, earlier today. And she believes it's illegal and would go to court about it. So, but I do believe that there's no power of this board to extend
unknown caller
terms. It would violate the bylaws.
Share point of information, please.
It's a request for information, Vanessa.
Request for information. Thank you.
Go ahead, Vanessa.
Okay. So P and LSBs have done that previously. I know for a fact that has been done a couple of times at PFW. So, Arthur, are you validating that that was illegal?
I'm not validating. I'm saying that a motion passed by the board to extend terms would be unlawful.
Written rather than a substitute.
And would also land us in court.
So would it be appropriate for the individual LSBs to make a decision? I mean, do the LSBs have that authority?
No.
Since it...
There's a whole list of things in the bylaws that the LSBs can't do, and one of them is to amend the bylaws.
Point of information?
Go ahead, James McFadden.
Chair, you know, I'm on the staff. I'll use...
I have a point of information. I wanted to make sure I understand.
It's a request for information.
Terms will not be extended.
I just want to make sure I understand. Is Arthur saying that somebody who was elected to a 3-year term but has not reached the 6-year is not allowed to be extended? Or is he saying just those who have reached the 6-year term limit are not allowed to be extended?
Right.
Which of the two or both? Because some people may have just been elected and only have served 3 years. Are they allowed to have theirs extended because they haven't reached the 6-year, which is what's in the bylaws?
Give me a second to look, but while you guys keep talking.
Okay.
I just want to look at what the bylaws say.
Hey, I also have a question.
Yes, go ahead, Lawrence.
So I think the other thing that could provide you some cogent defense, Arthur, is the fact that reducing the size of the LSPs go contrary to the bylaws. And then eliminating those that were elected from continuing will also go contrary to the bylaws. So it is disenfranchising, and I mean, a threat of a lawsuit. I mean, you have the bylaws to defend us as well in regards to this matter. So I don't think you could reduce the size of the LSPs or you know, this whole argument. It was done before. It was done before, Vanessa. You're correct. It was done before when the elections were postponed. I don't remember what year it was, but the elections were postponed, and those people continue. So, again, you know, I understand the threatening, and it could be scary, all of that, but I think you have the bylaws to also look at to defend us. Thank you.
Got it. Thank you. Aki was on the stack, and he, you know, said he had a motion to amend and pasted it in the chat, and I was attempting to read what was in there and discern what was the difference between what the elections committee originally sent and what Aki's substitute motion is. And so now Aki has helpfully sent along the additional instructions, which is that there are some words that are in square brackets, and those words are to be deleted. And the words that are in parentheses are the new words to be added. So whereas the original elections committee motion said that in that first big bullet that seats will not be extended, it takes out the not word. So it says seats will be extended for those terming out and will not be filled by those defeated in a past election. And it also takes out the part that says, and the local station board will be smaller for whatever part of 2023. And it also removes the adjective smaller when describing the 2023 local station boards. So that's the substitute motion. Beth.
That is disenfranchising.
Yes, thank you. I've been looking for this to arrive in the email, and it hasn't yet. Could I ask that the wording, as you've just described, be provided to the secretary who can send it? I get everything sent from the secretary. I don't always get everything sent by individual members.
Yeah, Aki.
I have not seen the language.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, excellent point. Aki, could you send that to Elena so she could forward to the PMB, please?
Julie?
I sent it to the Perino and Marianne.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, yeah, I have it. I'm forwarding it to you, Beth, at your preferred email address.
Thank
you. Can I answer the question I think James posed?
Go ahead.
I think it would be the bylaws say a delegate's term of office shall be 3 years. And then it says a delegate may serve a maximum of 2 consecutive 3-year terms, but they have to get reelected for the second 3-year term. I just don't think it's lawful to say, well, we don't care what the bylaws say. And
Alan for the stack.
We would have a problem defending that in court. If somebody brought the lawsuit, and we have litigious people in Pacifica.
Thanks.
Sure. After the next person, request for information when appropriate.
Yes. So I'm trying to keep track of, okay. So one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put Aki's hand down. Oops. And so that puts, so the stack is now Alan. Lawrence, James Sagerton, Susan, Beth Von Gunten, James McFadden, John Tatum, and Teresa, I hear you too. So here we go. We're going, and I know Vanessa has a request for information too. So let's keep going with the stack. Lawrence?
Yeah, I completely oppose this disenfranchising effort to disenfranchise something that we have practiced when these bylaws were codified. So to attempt to disenfranchise those who are legitimate is elitist. And I would never support anything that disenfranchises members' rights. Thank you.
Thanks. Jim Sagerton, then Susan Sagerton. Sagerton, you're not unmuted yet.
Sorry. Talking away, thought I was unmuted. First, I want to say that, you know, the prime directive, if you will, of the new bylaws back 20 years ago was to instill democracy into Pacifica. And so we created elections. And this situation is requiring us to cancel and or, let's say, postpone elections to another time, you know, and it looks like that other time will be the next time elections would have rolled around next year. So when you have to violate the one of the prime reasons for the bylaws to begin with by not having elections, then what's the best way to adjust the situation to maintain that democratic impulse that created the bylaws in the first place? And I would say it's not to go to delegates or runners up who didn't get enough votes to be elected in a prior election 3 years ago. It's to extend the terms of the people who did get elected, who got enough votes to get elected, one more term until they get to the new election and the votes are counted and the new people are seated. And so, I understand Arthur saying it's illegal in terms of the bylaws, but it would also be illegal in terms of the bylaws not to have an election. But I guess the answer there is necessity. You know, you can't have an election if you can't pay for it. But the prohibition in California law is against delegates voting to or directors voting to extend their own terms. There's no, there's nothing in the California law that makes it illegal to extend delegates, I think. So right. It's just right. A question of how
time
is up. I just finished my thought. It's not a question of deciding, the question is how to best resolve this unfortunate situation where we can't have an election. That's the question.
Thank you. Susan, then Beth. Susan?
Yes, first let me state that I support extending terms as being the best way to deal with the fact that we're not following the bylaws requirement for an election. I think I heard Arthur say that he does not think that this is appropriate within the bylaws. And if I'm not mistaken, you also said that rotating the people who did not win in 2021 to fill the seats that are caused by vacancy, not by resignation or inability to serve, but because of the non-election, is not appropriate and in fact is likely to prompt a suit, which is exactly what I've heard. So what I think I'm hearing, Arthur, is your belief that the best way to deal with this is to leave all of these seats vacant, which is the original motion. The original motion coming out of the Elections Committee is where there are termed out seats, they stay vacant. So you're not extending and you're not rotating in the people who lost. Is that your recommendation, Arthur?
Go ahead, Arthur.
Was that a question?
Yes.
Yes.
That was a question.
Is it your recommendation that there should be vacancies? That's the best way to deal with the bylaws?
There's nothing that says there has to be 24 people on the board. If there aren't 24 candidates, we don't say someone can get appointed. They're just a smaller body.
All right. Beth, then James McFadden. Beth?
Thank you. Yeah, a few points. I agree with Mr. Sagerton's interpretation. I think there's a problem with replacing delegates who were elected with more votes with others who garnered too few votes to be elected originally. I consider it a problem to deprive voting members of representatives that they have indeed elected in the past, to be replaced by no one. And I guess I've been listening to this debate at a distance. I'm not part of the elections committee, and I assumed some of it would be sorted out and we'd have decisions to make at this point. But to me, it has always seemed that the fairest thing would be to freeze current governance in place until they can be replaced by a proper electoral process rather than deleting any given part of it, distorting the representation that we have presently, that though we haven't been able to have an election this year, those who are now seated were indeed elected by proper processes. And I guess if that wasn't going to be considered an option legally, it's not clear to me why we didn't know that at the beginning of this debate months ago when the committee was first stood up and we first knew that we weren't going to be able to cover the cost of an election this year. And usually when I speak, I try to give it some sort of direction or development, and this is just a conglomeration of what I've been able to glean so far. It's not clear to me what we should do. I don't want to be sued.
Beth, your time is up.
On the other hand, I don't want to leave this to random processes. Thank you.
Motion to extend to exhaust the stack?
Exhausting the stack would be hearing from James McFadden, Mr. Tatum, Vanessa, I'm sorry, Teresa, then Vanessa, then Aki, then Jim Sagerton.
Second.
Thank you. Any objections to the motion to extend to exhaust the stack that I just listed? Hearing none, we're extended. James McFadden.
I'd like to get some clarification from Arthur. And, you know, I'm just looking at a particular. So if a person was, if there was a person on the LSB who was going to term out this year, but they had resigned and a runner-up took their position, that runner-up has not been 3 years on the board. Would that runner-up also, though, as what you're suggesting, vacate at the end of the year? And that's the question. And before I he answers, I want to just say one other thing. I think this idea that people are defeated is not really the way. I mean, people like to play this win-lose game. People that are runners up because we know people will leave the boards and, you know, they're not going off to do something else, but they're kind of in a waiting room for their possibility to serve on the board. And I think it's a very, negative and really not, you know, it really is, very dismissive of people who take those seats, you know, after the fact. We have several people here that are on the KPFA LSB that have taken those seats because people have vacated. And I just think we shouldn't use language like that. So I think it's just very, dismissive. But anyway, the question to Arthur.
I think there's, wait, am I on?
Yes.
Okay. I think there's maybe an answer in Article 4, Section 10, filling of vacancies. So the replacement method, right, is not It says, if a delegate position becomes vacant mid-term, the delegate shall be replaced for the remainder his or her term by the highest-ranked candidate from the last election. But then it says, in the event that no eligible or available candidate from the last election is found, then the delegates of that radio station shall appoint a member of the appropriate class to serve as delegate and fill the seat for the remainder of the term. So I think if we work around that language, that the board can, the delegates can appoint a member of the appropriate class to serve to fill the seat. But it says for the remainder of the term. And that's the problem. The term is over. I think that there's a difference between this issue and not having the election. The not having the election, the having the election also clashed with your fiduciary responsibility as board members to not run an election that you can't afford to pay for. That's a clash in provisions of the bylaws. And whether it was de facto, we didn't hold elections because we didn't, can't afford an election supervisor and an election administrating company. The rest of it. Expensive.
I have a request for information, Chair.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
So my request for information is that there's still going to have to be an election held, even if the other SPs are going to assign other delegates. And in that case, if you have a majority, then they will assign somebody in that's aligned with that majority. So it's just a disenfranchising act. To even consider reducing. And the fact is,
I was talking myself out of that. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So back to the stack. We're at, Mr. Tatum now.
Yes. Back to the bylaws. Anything that you do in violation of your bylaws is null and void, according to Roberts. Therefore, he's saying that you just can't do it. So, here's the way out. When the election is supposed to be held, your bylaws say you have to hold the election. I think it's by, November the 30th? So, when that decision comes up, to have an election or not have an election, you have actually adhered to your bylaws because it did come up at a meeting and you did consider it at the meeting that you were supposed to consider. So then someone gets up and says, well, we can't afford this election. And guess what? Here's a chance for it where it's okay to kick the can down the road. So you say, well, we can't do it because we don't have the money. So then you postpone. Okay, you keep postponing it. You have at that point not violated your bylaws because you had an attempt to have it at the appropriate time. You were not. You postponed it. And the motion could be, we'll postpone this election until we get the money to have it. Okay, so now another tidbit of Roberts. Roberts says that you should not, officers and a part of your fiduciary responsibility, like Arthur said, is to have officers to lead your organization. So if you have to have officers, then Robert says, they have a special rule of Robert that says that people are elected until their successors are elected. So what if their successors are never elected? That means they stay in office. So what I'm saying here is that you're kicking the can down the road. You make all these attempts to have an election. You cannot. It keeps getting postponed. And so Robert says everybody stays in place until you get the money.
Thank you, Mr.
I don't disagree with what Mr. Tatum just said. So because it is true, I've seen contested elections in organizations, particularly in unions, where there's an appeal and it has to be a rerun, the incumbent stays it up. Some unions, the incumbent stays in office, and some unions, the guys that won the contested election go in office. But many times, incumbents will stay in office if there's some issue about, who won the election. But actually, I don't know. If there's a contest over who won a congressional seat, the outgoing congressperson doesn't stay in office. The seat's just vacant. I'm not sure I agree with Mr. Tatum on that.
Yeah, well, I'm just quoting Roberts. It's not what I'm saying. Roberts says, stay in office until your successors are elected. Therefore, you wouldn't have any vacancies and you would not.
Can you tell me where to look in Roberts and I'll just look it up fast?
Roberts suggests you can look up that statement until their successors are elected. Just look up that statement and it'll take you right to it. Until their successors are elected. Roberts recommends that you have that in your bylaws, which, PNB does not. However, it is a persuasive argument to keep everything in place until you get the money. Now, there's one other thing, Madam Chair. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, go ahead.
There's the issue of, terms. And it especially talks about when your terms are up and there's nobody to replace you, you stay there until you get someone to replace you. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Tatum. So now we get to Teresa, then Vanessa. Teresa? We can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Now we can. Yep.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think we're working real, I don't know about you, but I'm working really hard to have our election and to find candidates to run. We obviously, in my opinion, cannot let half of our LSBs be vacant, because then the pool to the national board and all of our national committees is they're too small. We would not be able to fill the PNB. So I support Aki's, I forget whether it's a substitute or if it's an amendment, but I support it and I support what Jim Sagerson said. I hope we're the same. I'm very confused because I cannot see things. I'm on a phone in a remote area of California and I can't see a lot of the things that are in the chat. Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa. Vanessa, then Jim Sagerson. Vanessa?
Well, at this point, I don't even know what to say. I was previously going to make the point that Arthur already made about the remaining LSB appointing members for the vacancy, but then Arthur said it's only until the term expires. I don't know where to go with this. I really don't, because we can't afford it. We can't afford rent and electricity. So how are we going to afford the tens of thousands of dollars for an election? An organization also has the responsibility not to kill itself by, spending money it doesn't have. If we don't have the money, we don't have the money. And I think it's just really unfortunate that, Jan has inserted herself into this process with this threat, you know, if you don't spend money you don't have, I'm going to sue you, and then you'll have to spend money defending. It's absurd. It's insane. So I'm sorry. I don't even. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Vanessa. I appreciate your sharing your thoughts, at, you know, however they are. Jim Sagerton, then Sue Goodwin. Sagerton? Who's not yet unmuted?